Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show. We're helping others is the name of the game, and on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Ms. Linda, who is a leadership coach who helps people to gain more of their time, their freedom, and to do what they value the most. When I tell you, I am looking so forward to this because she's going to actually teach me how to gain more of my time as well. Welcome, Ms. Linda.
Thank you, Patrice. Thanks so much for having me on it. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this because I believe all of us, one thing COVID taught all of us was we want to do more. We want to gain more of our time back. We want to reclaim, as Auntie Max would say, we want to reclaim our time. We want to reclaim our freedom. We want to do more. So today I'm looking forward to hearing how you're going to share some tips for us to do that. But before we get into that, what's your story?
Yeah, thank you. You are so right. COVID has highlighted so many things that are most valuable in our life. And my story rolls back. We'll start with about a year ago when I read a survey from Deloitte that said 77% of people in the U.S. workforce were reporting burnout in their current role. And simultaneously, I was starting to have some professional energy after my youngest had turned a year and a half. And so I just thought and prayed, what do I do with this energy? And I myself have been burned out. 12 years ago, I started in a new job. It was an international position. I had the opportunity to get my master's at the same time. I was a newlywed. And I was also on the board of a nonprofit for a passion project of mine. And my very work ethic, my way of being, the things that had helped me get to that point, then became somewhat of a double-edged sword. And I just got worn out by having four such high-level commitments. And so when I read that survey last year, I thought, oh, this is what God is calling me to do right now. This is what I want to spend my energy on. And so I started researching and finding a way to combine my leadership coaching experience, where I have walked with several leaders through this transition of thriving both personally and professionally, so that you don't have to give up the personal side of things in order to thrive professionally. And with my own experience and then the research. And so that's what I've spent the last year doing.
I love how you just made a power, you hit a power statement for me. You said to learn how to thrive personally and professionally. Because in this world we live in, everybody pushes that you got to thrive professionally and you have to do this, you have to do that. But what good does it do for you to have all this limelight and no personal life? Yeah. All this success, and in the words of Billy Dee Williams, and no one to share it with. So I want to know, how does that work? And then, I love how you even highlighted a little bit more about those four high-level commitments. Mm-hmm. But so many times, it's so much easier, honestly, to say yes and not have to hear the drama and the craziness that comes behind the no.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you wish you really would have said no, like you really wanted to. How did that work for you? You had these four commitments. Were these like moments of heart struggles, or was it like, let me just say yes to say yes?
They were all heart level commitments. Of course, my new marriage was. And the job that I had just accepted was a unique and wonderful combo of my diverse career up until that point. I had been in international business and taught overseas. And so if I was hired as a study abroad site director, so I was able to combine my international business and higher ed experience in that role. That was really fun. And the nonprofit that I was on the board of raised money to dig clean water wells in developing nations. So very worthy work. And then I had the opportunity to pursue an MBA, and that had been a goal since I had finished college. So of 10 plus year goal, 15, going on 15 years. And so it just was, they were all good things. And I have found that with most people, people who care and want to add value to the world, we're deciding between good things. And so much of our competing priorities are not, you know, unworthy things. They're things that are great. But when we stack them together, for me anyway, it wore me out.
So I love how you talked about it was something that was a passion, your passion project, going back to school, the new marriage. Mm-hmm. All of this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I can hear somebody going, well, she had all the stuff she wanted, but she was missing something. What did you feel you were missing at the time?
That is a good question. At the time, I wouldn't have said I was missing anything because all of it was right there. And now as I reflect, you know, hindsight's 2020, I was missing time to rest and rejuvenate so that I could be my best self in each role. And so when there is no margin, life happens in the margin. And so then you're still responding to the moment, the urgent. And then the running joke with my husband was that I would be asleep within, you know, 10 minutes of trying to watch any movie or read any book or on any car ride. You know, I was just tired in my downtime. And that's not how I wanted to show up personally.
I love that, because when people talk about showing up, that's what it really means. That's what life really is. How do you show up for you and the people around you that love you? Not how you're showing up for those that you're putting on, you know, this is my professional job, so I'm putting on the great, you know, the great smile, a little makeup, and I'm walking through feeling confident. How do you show up when there is nobody else there? And it's just you and your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a powerful and important piece. I love that. You did higher ed for 12 years. I personally, anybody who does middle school and higher ed, you all have instant heaven ways. Like they open the heaven gates and say, come on in, and they give you extra food. I just believe that. It is not an easy job. And I can imagine from the time that I did elementary, I thought that was one thing. But then when I saw middle school and in college, I was like, yeah, I'll stick down here with the babies. How was that experience? And did you find out after a while that that became a burnout piece?
Well, that is where I would say I burned out, because in my career, I've been hired to start new programs every single step. And it took me a while to see that pattern, but my very first job in my career here was to create a cross-cultural marketing program for a company that was very large, but wasn't meeting, you know, the diverse market that we've got in the U.S. And then I created a new program for a nonprofit up in New York, and came, when I was back in Nashville again, I started an import arm for a company here. And so this role at the university was starting a new site, you know, for a new study abroad site. And so these pioneering roles, I enjoyed the diversity of the work. I enjoyed working with people in different cultures. I enjoyed the startup, you know, seeing it grow from like little bitty baby to sustainable program. And then this is a key thing with burnout, is things that you enjoy, something that you've enjoyed, often your profession, you start to feel a little cynical about it or hostile, or you feel like the time you're putting in and the effort doesn't equal the reward. So that's a key sign of burnout. And as I look back, that's what I was experiencing. I didn't like shut down physically. Like burnout can have some pretty large ramifications. If it's left unchecked, it can lead to things like heart attack and diabetes and depression, things that take a long time to heal. So I never got to that level, mental shutdown. You can lose the ability to make decisions. So I was not really full blown burnout, but I was on the spectrum, and it did show up as just several of the key warning signs that I now know is diminished interest in work and inefficiency because you're tired, things take longer, and then you feel like your effort and time does not equal the reward because you're taking longer to get things done. So there's this cycle that you end up that just kind of feeds itself without a break in the cycle. So I did end up just less interested in the work, a little hostile, a little grumpy, not a little bit grumpy. I was more grumpy at home than I was at work. But
what I love and how you explain it was the cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about the cycle, the first thing came to my mind was like a hamster on the wheel. And yeah, how we kind of have that in this American society where it's like work, home. If you subscribe to church, or if it's work, home, go out with friends, and it just kind of happens over and over again. It kind of turns into literally, what is that movie? Groundhog Day. Where you just exist. Mm-hmm. Or in some spaces, you just survive enough to make it through until Friday. And as you're talking, I thought about, you know, in my time where I've gone through burnout, and it's interesting, you say you didn't go to that level. I was on the floor. Let me just put my own self out here in my own burnout situation. I was on the floor. I was the person who literally was coming to work. I had headaches. I wasn't sleeping. At some points, well, in my height of it, I had gained quite a bit of weight. I had ballooned all the way up to 337 and climbing. Started doing other things in the midst of it, thinking that was going to ease the problem. So I started trying to find other things, only to make it worse. And as this went on, was there a moment when you finally went, yeah, I got to change some stuff? And I know, you know, we talk about that burnout piece. And for some people, it's, you know, it's the physical piece that they show. Some people, it's the emotional. And then, like you said, for you, it was just that cycle. Mm-hmm. And I've had other people even talk about that. I felt like if I wasn't burned out, that it just wasn't normal.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great question. So for me, and really like the definition of burnout is it comes from prolonged stress. And so prolonged and excessive stress and the exhaustion, you know, after that. And so what my wake up call was, so it took me about 2 years to finish my grad program, not because the program was that long, but because every now and then I'd have to skip a class in order to do a trip. And so I'd have to wait till that class came back around. So it took me about 2 years. And about a month or two after graduation, I was still so tired. And I thought, okay, this isn't going away, you know? I better look into what else is happening. So it was kind of a thing where I thought it would just, you know, get better after the extra commitment was gone. And when the energy level didn't return fairly quickly, kind of woke me up that I probably needed some additional care, you know, additional efforts to feel like myself again. And it took about 6 months with some holistic health care.
So let's talk about those 6 months, because now you've had this moment where you're seeing, oh my gosh, you know, the energy is not coming back. This is done. And I thought, you know, I would get back on my stride again. What was that 6 months like for you? Like, talk about that first day when you said, I'm going to reclaim my time and start loving me. What was that first day like?
Well, it was energizing. It was empowering. And really, that's one of the shifts. One of the strategies that I share with people is a mindset shift. The permission to slow down. Permission to stop working 50, 60 hours a week. Permission to leave, you know, at the normal cutoff time and come and do something that was creative and different. And the funny thing is I think my work-life boundaries were, I mean, my work boundaries were better when I finished grad school than when I was in it, because I had this clarity of, okay, working harder doesn't necessarily get it done. And I now know some things like Parkinson's law that says things will take as long as you let them. And that my work ethic had, you know, become a double-edged sword. I wasn't aware of it even at that point, but my commitment to just work hard until the job got done, But it that's also what tired me out. And so some of the research I found last year was that things that make someone a high achiever, which I imagine you, it sounds like you relate to this, the things that make someone a high achiever actually put them at risk for burnout, because we are willing to go above and beyond to make sure excellence is delivered. And so, yeah, that shift was a mindset shift to leave work, you know, at 5 and get as much done as I could and then go in refresh the next day. And the funny thing is, research is showing that people actually are more productive when they do adhere to their boundaries. So I didn't know any of that at the time, but the spirit must have been guiding me, you know, through that recovery. And I, you know, started getting chiropractic care, and I eventually went to the acupuncturist and learned that I had adrenal fatigue. And so I went on some just herbal supplements and stuff like that to really repair the part of your body that handles stress. So
I'm going to ask you to go back for a second, and I apologize. Yeah. You said adrenal fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Tell what the audience what that is.
Okay. Yeah.
They're running on it and it's happening and they don't know.
That's right. So I was too. So adrenal fatigue is when you're in stress, your cortisol hormone is what deals with stress in your body. Mm-hmm. And for any doctors who may listen to your podcast, I apologize if this is too much of a layman's explanation, but when that cortisol is the hormone that is functioning most, it taxes your adrenal system, and the adrenal system basically gets worn out and cannot keep up, cannot replenish. And the other hormones, the things that give you the good feelings, mm-hmm. can't get reproduced either. And we need cortisol for a variety of things. Cortisol helps our sleep cycle as well. But when it is overactive, your adrenal system gets fatigued. And that is not always the reason why people are exhausted physically, but is usually connected to that.
So we don't even realize that while we're being these high achievers and pushing and doing all this, we're not just doing damage in relationship pieces and not being able to really show up and be our full selves. We're actually doing hormonal damage.
Yeah.
So yeah. You gave yourself this permission. You said, I'm going to start setting my boundaries. I'm stepping out. I'm now going to chiropractic work. I'm going to the acupuncturist. What else was a part of that plan for you to create that recovery wellness plan for you?
Well, and you know, that's interesting. So the other part of what we were looking into was family life, and I wasn't able to get pregnant, and I learned that the adrenal fatigue was kind of connected to that or exacerbating it. So that was another part of the work of the wake up call was, oh, you know, this other thing that I've dreamed of for such a long time has also been affected. It wasn't the cause of our infertility, but it definitely wasn't helping. That adrenal fatigue had, so that was another part of the permission was, okay, it's time now to focus on, you know, family. And so I still honored all my work commitments. I still worked very hard, but I worked hard in the specific work hours, and I didn't allow myself or let myself go over. And I wasn't somebody that was working a ton over at the office, but I was one of these people that would, you know, get home, get dinner, and then get back to it a little bit, you know. So I tried to stop that as well and just say, this is, you know, this is enough for the day. And nothing suffered. That was the big blessing to see, was that what I now know research has found was actually true. It's not like less got done. You know, I figured out a way to still, and you get real clear when you limit your work hours, you get clearer on what needs to be done. What are the things that actually move the needle? And you focus on the ones that are most important instead of some of the busy work that really can be let go.
Okay. I can go with it. Yes, we can let go some busy work. Uh-huh. I definitely see that. What has been the fruit for you? Because you spoke about the infertility. Do we have our little one?
We do. So our little ones are miracles in their own right. So we were in the middle of, and we tried for a long time. We were actually infertile for 6 years. And about 2 years into that, a dear friend that I ran into at a nonprofit fundraising dinner said, "Do y'all want kids?" And it was one of those days where I was having a hard time with it. And I said, "We'd love to. We just haven't been able to." And I was in my late 30s. I married in my mid 30s. And so I was in my late 30s when we started trying, but I didn't see it coming because I thought I was healthy. I didn't know I had adrenal fatigue when we started trying. And she, in 2 months, heard about a little baby who would be born to a mom who couldn't keep her. So she connected us to our daughter's birth mom. And 3 months after we heard about her, she was born and in our arms. It was just amazing. We had to rush through a home study. And and when she was two, I went and met with a different, an herbalist, and asked her just to help with wellness and stuff. And so I met with her and eventually asked her some fertility questions. And she said, I think you're able to. And my daughter really wanted a sibling. And I said, "Well, I don't think I can get you a sibling, but we can pray about it." And I talked to my herbalist again, and we just kind of prayed about it. And I was 42 years old and got pregnant and had a healthy pregnancy. And we now have our son against all odds. They had given us 5% chance 5 years before he was born. And so the fact that he is with us is a different kind of miracle. So
what an amazing testimony of,
yes,
one, seeing how, I have to be honest, I'm a little shocked to see how, when we walk around burned out, how it affected the actual body in that area. And then to turn around and find out that you went from being in the space of, "I want a baby, but I can't," like literally that story of Hannah in some ways, yes, and then ended up with a beautiful little baby girl. Mm-hmm. And then once you did further research, stepped out and had another miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just beautiful, because I think for so many of us, especially in American society, especially with women of color, or people of color, I should say, there is such a concern about being able to have healthy children and healthy pregnancies. And a lot of it honestly could be just cutting down. I remember I used to work with this young lady at my first, in my first career. She had wanted kids for forever. And she would always say, I'm so stressed out. And it is amazing to me. She left the job not even 6 months after she left. She was pregnant with her first baby. And it's just something beautiful to see when we actually take control and, as you said, become empowered to make those decisions to say, "I'm no longer going to allow this to control me. I'm going to control this."
Mm-hmm.
And it gave you such a beautiful result.
Yeah. It was, the Lord was gracious to us twice.
Yes.
And I don't know, people, when you're stressed out about not being able to have a kid, everyone says, "Well, stop stressing out. That's part of the problem." And if I could stop stressing out, I would.
Exactly. You know, it's easy to tell somebody these things, but it's different when you're experiencing it.
Yeah.
And I think people get that, but that one moment just really touched me. So I had to slow down. It kind of called.
Thank you for sharing that.
What I do love is now that you're out of this and you've moved out of this burnout, what are you doing now? Because everybody talks about they're burned out, they're stressed out, and everybody's, you know, talking about how there's this big, there's a second pandemic of people leaving their jobs and all of this. And I'm going, but this is because they've been so stressed out and been told for so long, you have to give all this time to someone else. So what are you doing in your leadership coaching to share with people that they don't have to do this? They don't have to give away their time. They can reclaim their time and their lives.
Yes, amen. We, like you said at the beginning, if COVID taught us anything, it's that life is precious. We want to be with those who matter. And so the burnout is not new to the pandemic, but it's definitely exacerbated it, as the pandemic has exacerbated all sorts of challenges, right? This one is a big one, probably one of the biggest. And so I took the research that I conducted last summer and started offering webinars and was just trying to share it with as many people as I could. And then in July or August, I realized I've got enough to turn it into a book.
Oh, okay.
And so I use some of these things and have used some of these things without there being like a framework, you know, a research-based framework with clients for years to balance their, you know, their professional success with their personal well-being. And so this book that I've written is called Burnout to Boom: Strategies for More Energy and Less Stress. And it is written as if you've got a leadership coach right there with you. It's a workbook, and it starts with what I think is the most important part, which is awareness. And that awareness is what burnout is, how it manifests itself, and what are the warning signs and risk factors? Because some of those, I think, have been the biggest aha for people. Oh, I didn't realize that was a warning sign, you know, because if you know you've got these risk factors in your life, then you can start looking at the risk factors and how can you, you know, either hit them head on or eliminate some of them. So there's that. It starts with awareness. And I've got this, after working with a fair number of people, I've got a success framework that is awareness, practice, celebration, and then tweaking. So you start with where you are, and then you set a goal, you put something into practice, you reflect on that practice after you do it for a little while, and you celebrate your wins, you look at what you learned, and then you tweak it to, you know, to keep setting yourself up for success. And then you go back to awareness, and it's a cycle, a success cycle. So the book brings in that success cycle that I've seen work for what I call sustainable change, because I don't want to put a Band-Aid on anything. A Band-Aid doesn't help burnout long term. Most of us that are on the burnout spectrum have mitigated it to some degree, you know, or we would be full-blown burnout. We've got little techniques that have helped us to some degree. And then you had this big pandemic come in and add more stress than you were used to managing. And that's why you got further down the cycle. So it's, you start with awareness, and then I share the four ways that burnout, I share strategies inside the four ways that burnout shows up, which is emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual. And so I introduce like what it might look like in each of those ways, a strategy that would help if that's the one that resonates with you most. And There are reflections built in so that people can pause and see what, you know, what does this look like for my context? And then there's a whole planning section to support your strategy for, to really get you some sustainable relief.
So what I love about this, you talked about being aware, having that practice, celebrating, and then tweaking. Mm-hmm. And what I like about it when you talk about the tweaking is for so many people, we see that part as, well, I didn't get it right. We didn't ask you to get it right. We just want to make it where it's for you to be able to be your best self.
Yeah.
I love that. And then I love how you talked about your four. It's interesting. Your four are actually a part of my seven that I talk about quite often. So I love how you talk about that emotional, that mental, the spiritual piece. So many people don't realize all of that intertwines, the physical piece. And I think, too, we're so used to a different face of burnout. Mm-hmm. We don't realize, and I thought about it, as you were saying, with high achievers, nobody really thinks they're burned out. When I think about the young lady who took her life, I believe she was the Miss America young lady. Everybody in the office talked about how she was always happy, always this, and she, you know, always had a yes. But she was downright depressed, had several suicidal thoughts and attempts before the actual completion of the act. And it all was honestly because she was burnt out. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew the face, because in society, we're used to giving the face of they're sad, they're moping. And we don't really talk about the one who is the high achiever, as you said. So I'm happy that you came. You got to give me some more. Give me some more. I need some ways, some things that I can say, hey, I'm aware, I'm practicing, I'm celebrating, I'm tweaking. What do I need to look at when I say I'm aware? Give me two things that I need to kind of look at when you're saying you're aware.
Mm-hmm. So awareness, this is a great question, because I do think awareness can be divided into two things. So what warning signs and risk factors do you have in your life? Are you a high achiever? Are you a helping professional? Do you have a hard time saying no? Are you prone to work overtime? So those are the some of the individual warning signs. There are absolutely some organizational warning signs. So these feel a little harder because some of them are out of your circle of influence, but sometimes they're not. You know, sometimes you're the leader at work and you've got an opportunity to influence the culture. So things like communication from managers are a huge part of burnout, or lack of it, lack of support, some dysfunctional workplace dynamics, overtime, being on call 24/7. So those are some of the organizational risk factors. So that's one part of awareness, is what warning signs and risk factors do you have? And then the second part of awareness is a lot more joyful to think about, because it's what do we as people need to fill our cup? So you've got these warning signs and risk factors. Not all of them can be eliminated. Many of them can't. But what we can do, what is in our circle of influence, is being intentional to fill our own cup, because we cannot give what we don't have. So I actually, when I was writing the book, I knew this was going to take some overtime. And so I did a little joy challenge the month I was really trying to get it out the door. And I came up with a list, actually at the suggestion of a coach, for she said, get to 12, list 12 things that bring you joy, and make sure that they vary in resources of time and money, and do one thing for yourself per day. So I think most people are like this, but it took me a little while to get to 5. How am I going to get to 12? 5, right? You know, because I was hyper-focused on getting this book out. You know, all I could think was about production. So even for me, as a high achiever, it is a daily awareness of what do I need to do? And this joy challenge, eventually, the longer I leaned into it, The longer the list got, I got inspired and creative. And, you know, it might just be laying in the hammock with the sun on my face or taking the time to drink a hot cup of tea without doing something else at the same time. Talking to a friend that I haven't talked to in a little while. But I was so surprised. I think I got to 32 without much effort at all, just by thinking of things that truly just put a little bit in the joy bank. And 28 of them were at my house or right around, you know, me without any money involved in all.
Oh, I love that you talked about that, because as you're talking about filling your cup, getting that mm-hmm. joy. And I love that you even gave yourself a joy challenge, because for so many people, when you talk about getting your joy back, people think of what I call islands of anticipation. Mm-hmm. They think of the big things.
Yes.
Sometimes your islands of anticipation, especially, you know, for me, an island of anticipation for me is a nice ice cold cherry Coke. That is the happiest thing. Now, is it good for me? No. But at least one a week won't keep me from where I was before. Right. So I love that. That's something that can be a moment of joy for me, but doesn't have to be a stumbling block for me.
Right.
You've gotten your joy part together, and you're filling your cup of joy daily. And that's another part, daily, because mm-hmm. we always look for, I could do that. We put it off. I could do that another time, or I don't really have time right now. It's important to make sure you're taking care of yourself daily.
Yes.
It's so easy to put you on the bottom of your own list and take care of everybody else.
Yeah, Patrice, you're a helper. I mean, that's what helpers do, right? They help right. other people. And so helpers are very quick to say, okay, well, this I can put off, you know, and this is usually something you personally need.
Wow. That was How do I make sure I stay disciplined in my practice? Because that's one for a lot of people. We're like, yeah, but I can make it up tomorrow. How do I stay disciplined and honor me? And keep up my practice.
Oh, I'm glad you asked this one. So there's something that has become a little more known lately, and it's called habit stacking.
Habit stacking. And talk so to me about that.
This one is where you, so think of something that you are already doing well, and it's a daily habit that you do well, and you combine your new habit with it. So I'll give you an example. It took me a while to like get the right combo, but I have a morning, you know, like morning quiet time. And I just started small. And it actually helped. My husband started doing it with me and helped me get more regular, but we would listen to a little meditation and then go on our own way. And the so once that was in place, I added in a gratitude practice. Well, that's one of the things also that helps fight burnout, is because you're focusing on the good, not just, you know, what has to be done or what's negative or what you can't change, but the gratitude. And then I, you know, so when I want to add a new, like, reflective practice, I'll combine it with my morning where I read my scripture, I do a meditation, I do gratitude. And I read some affirmations. So if your practice is movement of some kind, which that's one of the strategies that I share, is to get up and move throughout the day so that you are moving your body and not, you know, not just work in the grind. You might pattern it with something that you do midday already well, but that habit stacking is a good way to like make sure you're going to set yourself up for success, because when we start something new, it's hard.
I like that one. So that's a new one. Y'all got to hold me to that one. I'm going to start my habit stacking. I like this. How can I celebrate and don't break the bank? Because so many times, I know for me, celebrating means we're going to get a mani and a pedi. So that's my thing. It fills my cup of joy. So how can I go and enjoy and celebrate that, hey, I'm aware I've been practicing my joy and I want to celebrate, but don't break the bank?
Yeah, well, that's where the joy list, having varying levels of resources really helps. So you'll want to put things on there that, you know, cost $5 as well as the mani and the pedi, you know, or, you know, the, you know, something at the big far end is a, you know, a week of vacation or whatever. So you want to make sure to have varying levels of resources for, so for me, a little treat, you know, to, that is on that is a dark chocolate. I just love it. So it's one of my little treats. It's not going to break the bank, you know, and I've got a little secret stash. And so, nobody knows, you know, I don't think anybody knows where it is. And so that might be something I'll go, you know, get something for my little chocolate stash or whatever. So celebration is key. And Brendan Bouchard is one of the researchers that provided so much. I mean, one of the practitioners that provided so much for my research. He talks about the value of reflecting once a week. And so what you want to do is have that reflection, you know, ideally on a Sunday or Monday, so that it's, you know, at the beginning and you can look back at the week and then plan ahead for the next one. But just stop. And when we create these rules for ourselves, take them seriously as if, you know, you would honor it for someone else. And that really is, I think, the trick for me and a lot of the people that I've been working with is this is now your assignment. You know, this is your one of your important job tasks. It matters. You matter. And that's part of the mindset shift. But to create these commitments for yourself and take them seriously as if your doctor told you to, because if you don't, you might be meeting with a doctor about burnout. Right.
So hearing you say that, you remind me very much of something that my grad school professor said to me. He says, so here's how the world works. You can either come and talk to me about your mental health, or let's talk about getting rid of that anxiety or that burnout, or let's, you know, getting rid of that depression, or you can meet your doctor and they can prescribe you a whole bunch of meds to get rid of something or to reduce something that you could have dealt with in an easy conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, that does make sense. Yeah, he hit me on that one. I wasn't expecting that one. But I want to talk about this last piece, tweaking. When you talk about tweaking the process, does it have to be a major tweak or can it just be a little thing?
Well, I would say I think of tweaking as little, but there can be some big ones needed. And so when I think about tweaking, I think, okay, what were the lessons learned and what were the wins? You know, tweaking might just mean how many more times you do it. You know, tweaking might mean, so for me, as I tweaked my joy challenge, the first week I thought, okay, this is helping, but I probably need 2 deposits a day. I don't need 1 because it was overtime. And so one of the things that you do is to reflect, okay, is the time of day the right time, you know, that I chose for my strategy, whatever it is? Is the frequency the right amount? Do I need an accountability partner? Would this be even more fun if I was sharing it with somebody? You know, so those are the kind of tweaks that will set you up for more success. And now there might be a time where you think, okay, I tried that for a week. And I really encourage people to try something for at least a week to see, you know, if it helped you move the needle. But there might be a time where you think, okay, well, that strategy, it didn't do what I needed it to do. And you might pick another one. But most of the time, I think the tweaks are frequency or time of day and community involved with it.
So I'm going to ask that you give us your last words, and then how can we connect with you to get this amazing book? Because I got to tell you, I need to get my copy too, y'all. This sounds great. I feel like I need to get more aware, practice, celebrate, and tweak some things for myself.
Well, thank you, Patrice. I'm on Instagram and Facebook both as Alta Coaching, and I'm on LinkedIn as Linda Benthal Zelnick. And so you can find me on all of those socials. I have a website, www.altacoaching.com. And the book Burnout to Boom is on Amazon as a Kindle. And also there's a physical bound copy as well. And again, it's written as a workbook, as if you've got a leadership coach right there sitting with you, asking you questions about your specific context, because burnout is so personal. It does not show up in people in the exact same way at all. And really, you're the expert of your life as far as, you know, how you, one of the findings is that it's not really the amount of work, it's how someone feels about the workload. And so that is connected to how many competing priorities you have. If you've got aging parents and children, or, you know, things happening in the community around you, that's going to impact how you're able to deal with your workload, you know, is more than the workload probably. So the book is written, you know, to really meet people where they are personally with that design. And I also serve organizations via seminars where I go in and present the workshop. It's formatted differently. They're formatted so that they can complement one another and work with leaders on how they support their people, because this really is showing up in the workplace by way of people being absent, or presenteeism, where they're there but that not really there. Turnover can be very high among burned out personnel, and some industries are affected by this more than others. And so I'm trying to work with people individually, organizations as well, and then of course through this book.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Ms. Linda, for coming in and just sharing with us how we can reclaim our time, reclaim our freedom for what we truly value and what we want. And I want to thank you for tuning on in to the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of the game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.